everyone, and welcome to not only the South London Gallery, who are kindly hosting us this evening, but also this is the second in a series of public talks organised by Peckham Space, a new commissioning organisation for socially engaged projects. It's a partnership between the University of the Arts and Southwark Council. So tonight we have Lottie Child, who's the artist behind Peckham Street Training. We've also got Claire Cumblidge from the General Public Agency, who will be asking Lottie some questions about the notion of participation in the public realm. And then we're going to open up and see what questions people here have got. So I'm going to briefly explain Peckham Street Training. It's a collaboration between Lottie Child and furtherfield.org. Furtherfield.org are a net art organisation who unfortunately can't be with us tonight, but they will be represented through Lottie and Claire's discussion. Lottie's going to explain a bit more about the street training project. It's essentially being done in collaboration with Gloucester Primary School. We're working with people there towards developing a tour on the 20th of September. So without further ado, I'm going to pass over to Claire.
So, locating the public realm. We work broadly within ideas of what the public realm is. Is it a social space? Is it infrastructure? Is it the site of debate, of conflict, of play, of commemoration? Or is the public realm the victim of accelerated development? This is a book that we recently published called Design and Landscape for People. And this looks at transformative practice broadly within the public realm. And it records what we think is an emerging new field of practice, which is about people owning the transformations that happen in their environment. I've just put in a few examples here that I think contextualise Lottie's work in a broader field than that of art. This is OASIS, the Open Access Space Information System in the USA. And it's this incredible participatory mapping system where it gives people the opportunity to map their immediate environment and to use that data to help them in campaigning and making changes. This is a project in Germany, Hotel Neustadt, where it was a theatre group worked over a couple of years in a residential area that was in decline. And they work with a group of young people to create a children's town. And they turned a tower block of this estate into a hotel where all the rooms were designed by local children. Local children ran the tourist information and did the booking. And it was a whole programme of events. And it was an incredible transformation of the perception of this area. This is a project by Amy Fenwick, Runner, 2008. She's really interested in how we map and inhabit and create structures over the city. And she was, when she was an artist in residence at CCA in Glasgow, she started working with a woman's running network and did this piece around that, part of which was about choreographing the running of the women. But also she interviewed the women and created fly posters along the routes that included their thoughts around what running did for them. And my last project is Space Hijackers. And this is the anarchist versus capitalist Midnight City cricket competition, which is not necessarily art, or maybe. But their strategy here is that they dress, Space Hijackers dress in cricket whites, go to a pub in the city, drink until closing time, and then invite a whole group of city workers to mount a team to have a cricket match with them. And I think this is really interesting in relation to Lottie's work in that it includes physicality within the city, notions of legality and illegality and how far we can go, and humour and pranksterism as a kind of subversive activity. So I'd like to hand over to Lottie now.
Hello, thank you for coming. Welcome to your urban street training program. I'm going to introduce street training. I wanted to tell you that the other day I was in South Kensington and I was walking down a road where there was a bus stop on either side of the street, exactly even with each other, and there were two teenage boys, and they happened to be wearing hoodies, playing catch over the double-decker buses with a tennis ball. And then another day I was in a shopping mall, and there were some teenage girls hanging over the ledge right at the top, over the railings, and shouting out random men's names. I'm going to read you a quote from a sociologist called Pierre Bourdieu. He says, "I often say sociology is a martial art, a means of self-defense. Basically, you use it to defend yourself without having the right to use it for unfair attacks. And street training is an emergent martial art." And the definition of martial arts that I work with is a system of codified practices and traditions of training for combat. They may be studied for various reasons, including combat skills, fitness, self-defense, sport, self-cultivation, meditation, mental discipline, character development, and building self-confidence, or a combination of any of the above. So for me, street training is a serious practice, because I think that behavior is generative, so if you do something, you feel like doing it more. And that's why I continually practice what I call street training. It's the name that I've given the activities that I do, the activities that I've noticed and seen other people doing. And the events, street training sessions, it goes with the manuals, and now there's a website and some street training tutorials on YouTube as well. This is the cover of the first manual. There have been three: Camberwell, Linz in Austria, and King's Cross. And it's an ongoing, it's a manual that's being created constantly by the people that participate in street training. And I'm going to show you some pictures now. So these are the street training, these are the martial arts references. This is the front page of the University of Openness wiki. So going back to 2002, a group of us said, inspired by Joseph Beuys and the Free University and very inspired by the Copenhagen Free University at the time, what happens if we start a university using wiki software and say anyone can start a faculty? And a friend of mine, an artist called Kate Rich, started the Faculty of Physical Education. And I thought, if we're thinking about how we want to teach and how we want to learn, I want to put physical education at the center. And something that would usually be an extracurricular activity be the main focus. And as a result of that, I started the climbing club. So I would take people climbing on predominantly banks, but the buildings of the City of London on the last Sunday of every month. And people used to do much funnier things than scale buildings. And in the invitation, I would say, bring your kids, it's okay if you have a hangover, wear high heels, find your own way of negotiating your own relationship with the urban built environment. But people would do things like they'd hide in alcoves or they'd have funny interactions with security guards. And I wanted to open up the scope, and it was clearly so much more than urban climbing that we were doing. Because I was thinking about how I wanted to teach and how I wanted to learn and what was valuable knowledge, I thought I needed to find a good teacher. And I met Callum Dublin at a party, and he was talking to me using his whole body and doing lots of complicated and elegant movements on stairs. And so we made a training video together. It's called Urban Street Training Video, and he introduces it. And so he was teaching me. He was the one that, I'm sure you've noticed the way children are often, not all kids, but many, are looking for opportunities to play, looking for creative scope in a usually very drab urban environment, where most of us are just walking down the street with our walking down the street face on and using the street for going shopping and going to work. I just see people doing funny, creative things, and I want to learn from them, value them, and then create a structure where we can not only value them, but pass them around while the people who do them are valued for the skills that they're doing that in many contexts are considered to be antisocial behavior. So I might get awarded an art commission for climbing buildings or chalking and an a young Asian man might get slammed up against a police car for doing exactly the same thing. I don't know exactly how to address that, but one of the things I'm doing is bringing people who've got very different worldviews together to play and move through urban spaces together, engage in these kind of activities, and consensually work out what is playful, what is meaningful, what is appropriate to do. So, and one big inspiration from urban climbing, obviously parkour, the philosophy, the approach, repurposing the urban built environment, and before that, skateboarding. And so the street training manual is divided into two sections. It's the path of safety and the path of joy. So these are all techniques from the path of joy. And the first one was researched through two 24-hour walks around Camberwell. I got people together. We walked nonstop for 24 hours. And I asked everybody I could, how do I need to behave to be safe in the streets? And how do I need to behave to be joyful? And so the question, how do I need to behave to be safe? People had so many answers. They loved talking about it. It led me to think that perhaps we're disproportionately concerned about this, that safety is a constant preoccupation. And a lot of people in Camberwell said, if you want to be safe on the streets, don't go out. So this fear of public space is, I think, really affecting people. And I read a quote by MC Lady Sovereign saying that there's a flight indoors by the middle classes that are trying to stay away from people like her. So the answer, how to be joyful in public space, people didn't understand that question. People didn't think that was an option. So I had to look to young people and children and create more situations where I could introduce the activities that I'd learned and that I was doing and also elicit those kind of activities too. And this boy, I was in the Pinakothek in Munich. He said to me, because one of the things that happened when I found that I was transgressing the norms of behavior in public space, one, I had this really strong sense that I should police myself, that I was crazy. If I was walking one foot on the pavement and one foot on the curb, this was too beyond limits. And then I thought, okay, so we're all policing ourselves and each other quite a lot. But once stepping over that, there's all this scope for playful behavior. And by actually trying out different things, we find the boundaries that we're living with, and perhaps some of those boundaries are completely inappropriate and dictated by expedient or unimaginative urban design rather than anything that reflects our needs and uses of public space. He said to me, some boundaries you need, some boundaries you don't need. And I hadn't been able to conceptualize it that easily, and that's why I need to make meaning with other people, words and ideas. Just to introduce the Peckham Street Training, we're going to, along with Furtherfield, with Ruth, work with children and their parents in Peckham to explore the creative, playful things they do and formalize them as techniques. And then the children and the young people and their parents will guide you around Peckham, introducing these activities and inducing you to hopefully do your own playful actions as well.
I've got a microphone that I can pass around if people want to ask questions. So does anyone have any questions for either Claire or Lottie?
Hello. Yeah, I was just wondering, have you ever been out on a sort of street training event and anyone that you were with, have they ever done anything that you just thought, actually, no, just stop. That's bad, you know, don't do that.
No. But I went to talk to young people at Copenhagen Street in King's Cross, and I introduced the idea to them. And they went, yeah, brilliant. Yeah, we know what you're talking about. Throw fireworks into the kitchen of the Chinese restaurant. Get onto a van at the traffic lights. And then I was talking to the Tate Forum, a group of young people there, and one of them went, yes, I hide behind corners and jump out at people. And I'm really glad that they come out with that and that you came. It's essential because I don't know. I mean, I've got my own limits about what is and what isn't appropriate, for want of a better word. And for me, the incredibly important thing is judgment, developing judgment about what is and what isn't the right thing to do. And I wonder if that might be guided by thinking about how you feel, thinking about how other people feel, how your behavior impacts on other people. And it's on the edges. I mean, some of these things could easily be categorized as antisocial behavior, and that not only just depending on who they are, done by. So a code, I don't want to set up a moral standpoint for street training at all. I'm really interested in the process, facilitating the process whereby people decide what they are and are not prepared to do. Mm-hmm. So it's cool. Tricky, I don't know. That's where it, my ideas about it get to the edge.
You're saying you're seeking, like looking for structure and everything in what you're doing, and I was thinking maybe does structure not slightly defeat the point of possibly why this is fun and a sort of, well, slightly rebellious act? It's in the act of rebellion that it's actually quite an enjoyable thing to do, and that's what pushes us to do it. As soon as it becomes the norm, maybe it doesn't become something you feel you ought to do anymore.
I think there's two points there. I'll address the structure one and then the norms thing. From experience, if I want to engage people, giving people a structure, giving people options for how to engage, saying these are the parameters, is much more fun because people understand what the agenda is. And when things are completely open, so if I got a group of people together and said, let's just wander about and muck about and see what happens, in experience, that's actually been stressful for participants because they found it difficult to judge what might be part of the program. So creating a structure that's got enough flexibility and freedom has been a real aspiration, a real fascination for me. And that's why, and I've just remembered, I forgot to show, there's one slide of the website, which is, when I first came across Flickr, I thought, great, this is a space online where anyone who comes to the events can upload images without it being owned. This space is something that we all have a stake in. And I thought maybe it was a kind of online public space. And then I was disappointed because I think it's more like a pseudo public space, more like a shopping mall. And there are alternatives. So open source works differently. It gives people codes where people can pass the code around and add to it, augment it. So the construction of a piece of software is a collective activity. And the software that our website is made is called Drupal, and it is a space where people can upload video, photographs, and text. And it's also a place for people to debate online freedoms and online democracy that corresponds or mirrors urban public space. And there are similarities and there are differences. And that's why we're working with Furtherfield, because they're really experienced of a great deal of rigorous and critical debate around what constitutes democratic online space. And so the street training website will be a space for that kind of debate, as well as people to continually constitute what street training is by contributing their descriptions of the things they do for fun, to play, to keep themselves sane, to restore their faith in humanity, whatever.
In my experience of going on street training, it's catalytic about just having fun and behaving differently in public realm. And it doesn't teach you to do a thing which you then go off and do again. It's more about seeing your relationship with other people and the environment in a different way. I have a question which I think relates to a more general issue within participative practice. And I'm interested in how important it is to you that people have the direct participation, the direct experience of street training, or whether you are interested in expanding the impact of street training beyond a direct participative experience. And how much the work that you've been doing with Furtherfield is around potentially extending the influence of street training.
Well, I think I saw the first time the idea about escalator handrails from a photograph. It might have been from Blast Theory. So I don't think that there needs to be direct interaction. And I've been lucky enough to do this in lots of different cities, and that one of the things that the website enables is different groups in different cities to share, call them techniques, with video, photograph, or text. So the idea that you might be able to see what people are doing in São Paulo and maybe you want to try it in King's Cross. Does that address the question? Yeah, thanks. So it's really important to me to hand over People have been coming regularly. There are a few people, and Imogen's been coming, lots of street training, and now leads lots of the activities. Would you like to say, can I pass? Yeah. And then that's an aspiration, especially working with young people, because they're often the ones who have got the most skill in this, is that they actually demonstrate and take ownership of trails, guides, training sessions themselves. So I'm interested in how to, and if it's possible, to create an online community and to sustain and nurture that kind of activity in lots of different places by sharing. And we've used this thing called Twitter, where you can text what you've been doing. And it seems quite useful because Imogen the other day was walking along shadow lines, imagining that they were a tightrope, and texted that to me. And I talked, because I found out about using pigeons instead of pins for 10-pin bowling. And so the activities that people do, people might want to text them to each other, and in that way support each other in trying out these new things or celebrate the playful or devious activities that they're doing.
I'm not sure how much this is about participation, but it kind of takes in, I think, what you were asking about structure and the norms that may be established by street training regularly. I also lay down on the road crossing, and I've never done it before, and I've never done it since, but it certainly empowered me to lie down in front of traffic and to have them beep at you and to decide when you get up. And I think, as I say, I haven't been inspired to do it since. I might do it again at some point, but it certainly gives me a greater sense of my own power in the streets, particularly relating to traffic and maybe relating to kind of the environment in general. And in terms of participation, I think, yeah, this thing about Twitter and about the website, I keep at the end of sessions saying to Lottie or, you know, to the participants, like, if maybe they are inspired to do other things and to integrate certain things that they've learnt on the training or that they've developed themselves, maybe that we can all let each other know, so that perhaps if I'm doing a handstand in public for the first time, I feel really excited about finally having got over the boundary that I've had about doing handstands in public, and I want to share it with people. And that maybe if someone else is doing a handstand and they send it to me, I might feel inspired to do the same thing. So I think, yeah, you don't necessarily have to be there, but certainly to be able to pass these things on. And as Lottie's explained, it's always been the way, I think, in developing the practice, that it's taken from other people, and that we're always learning from other people, and that definitely sharing what you do when you do it, I think, can certainly help that.
My question is about coming back to empowerment and power. It's the idea of what is public space and that public-private divide. And I suppose I was just wondering about how you feel your work or the work of public realm, how you think about the politics of it, really, and how the private and the public interact, because there's a lot of talk about sort of disempowerment or not being able to change, you know, in the democratic process, and whether this activity has anything to do with that.
The notion of the public realm, I think, is very contested, and the public realm is shifting in contemporary society. And in our work at General Public Agency, we produce research, but we also get involved in practice. So we work a lot with private and public sector to try and transform the physical environment of the public realm. And so, for example, we invited Lottie to do street training, funded by some developers who took part in that session, who are master planning a major new development in that area. So I think sometimes you can change things through those kind of perceptual shifts. And I guess for us, we have been exploring the potential of those sort of interventions within the private sector to affect how the physical public realm is constituted. And we have found that there's more thought around creation or adaption of public realm in the private sector than there is in the public sector. And local authorities aren't as concerned and don't have anything like a sophisticated understanding of what the public realm is. Well, for a number of... I'm not saying that they all have fabulous ideas about wanting to create this open and free space, but they are creating public realms, and they are having to think more clearly about how spaces work, whereas generally at local authority level, there's an assumption about how public spaces are operating, and it's being ignored, apart from in very kind of focused programmes that might be about play space or general upgrade of street surfaces. The concept of public realm is not nearly as investigated within the public sector, in our experience.
I was thinking about like a long-term relationship. You need to invest and make yourself a little bit vulnerable. And I love this Majora Carter quote. She said, you don't have to move to a better neighbourhood to live in a better neighbourhood. So I think I want to believe that my actions make a difference to my environment. And I know they make a difference to my experience of that environment. So I do. I don't know what I muck about. I don't know what I'm doing. I try things, and I try and have a meaningful relationship with my environment and the people in my environment and the people I bring to that environment.
You seem to be talking quite a bit about learning and teaching, and then you mentioned the University of Openness and the kind of context of your work in the training manuals and the idea of instruction. Yeah. I'm just wondering why you're kind of drawn to that. To that kind of idea of needing to teach or learn. And I also wanted to ask what happens when this work is then placed as an artwork in a gallery?
I think constantly making sense is that's what we do, that's culture, that's society, is making meaning together. And so that seems like a quite fundamental desire to teach and learn. And play is a really good way of learning things. And so I like the idea of learning with, and then I also really like the idea, because I'm involved with debates around hierarchical educational structures and horizontal consensus-making structures, and I thought I would adopt a quite a didactic approach to be really quite transparent about that and say, yeah, do this, like this, so that people know that they can challenge that, and then equally put other people in the role of trainer. And so that is quite a clear system and hierarchy that isn't pseudo-transparent or with hidden agendas that are impossible to guess at and move through. And then what does it do when you put it in a gallery? I didn't want to. I kind of worked in opposition to gallery spaces, and then I only used them as places to incite or prepare people for action. So it would be training videos, movements on the wall, maps, snack packs with nuts and fruit, so you had lots of power, and chalk for your hands so that you didn't slip. It was all tool you up. And now I realise that I was thinking about, it's really good to read a novel. So novels aren't didactic. I can learn a hell of a lot from reading a story. So the space, and I haven't really thought this through, I'm thinking while I'm talking, that it doesn't need to be didactic anymore. I'm sort of in this. I think that it's still a good place for transmitting, and it relates to your question about does it need to be a direct interaction. Transmitting ideas using galleries is as valid as using a website, using a book, and I'm interested in widening access to galleries and not making them more exclusive.
I just wanted to say that I think a really significant aspect of making real change, physical change in a particular location, is around time scale. And you have to be committed over a long period of time. And that's what came out of our research for design and landscape for people. And I think in that sense, that work can often be in opposition to the demands and the practices of the art world. And it doesn't mean it's any less related to those strategies and practices, but it doesn't fit in with the art world because the time scales are so different.
Hi, I'm Steve. I did the sleeping workshop with you early last month. I liked the fact that you involved people who you might consider more full-time sleepers, rough sleepers, and that they were able to give quite a lot of input into the session, you know, quite a lot of experience. People are bound to interpret some of what you do as a sort of political exercise, I suppose. What is your position on that? How the people who, they're bound to be engaged in a slightly different way, people who are doing it all the time, and they see people like you and me doing it for fun. Do you see there's a tension there, or what is your position on that? Are you doing it partly to highlight the issue of rough sleeping? Or?
Yeah, conflict. The conflict between a self-proclaimed contemporary artist who goes around doing international art residencies, and a rough sleeper who, and we both want to sleep in the same space. That's conflict. And so that's, yeah, that sleeping workshop brought up that issue. And I don't know what the correct solution is to that. We explored the space together, and we made meaning together, and we were in a dialogue. And so that seemed worthwhile and meaningful to have, to explore, to get a sense of reading the landscape together with people who have a completely different experience of reading the landscape. And then I had this fantasy about how that there's a lot of research that says power naps are really beneficial for industry. So I was just thinking, at some point, people who are creatives or all kinds of business or all kinds of workers might be conflicting with urban rough sleepers for good places to have power naps. And how is that relationship? How are those conflicts dealt with? And I think it's Rosalind Deutsch who says that public space is constituted by conflict. It's not a harmonious place that conflict befalls. So that those kind of things are a part of the way public space is constituted anyway, and how we deal with them.
Okay, that is the end of tonight's talk. Thank you very much for coming.